I declare the meeting open at 5:30 PM. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne's website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or submission process, please speak with a member of the Council business team after the meeting. May I ask that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting? The agenda comprises 7 reports from management and 4 items of general business. No apologies have been received. I advise members of the committee and the public where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on the Council to move a resolution adopting the minutes of Open Meeting 56 held on Tuesday, the 21st of April 2015? Thank you, Councillor Wood. Seconded, Deputy Lord Mayor. I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That is unanimous. Thank you. Are there any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting?
No.
That case, as at 3 PM today, the following submissions were received in accordance with the Council's conduct of meetings, Local Law 2010. In relation to Agenda Item 6.1, Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendment C245, Queen Victoria Market, requests to speak from Anthony Vanderkratz, Tristan Davies and Peter Papagiadou, and an item of correspondence from Peter as well. In relation to agenda item 6.2, Flemington Road Oval Works, items of correspondence from Gordon Lay, Joe Edmonds and Julianne Bell, and requests to speak from Joe Edmonds, Kay Oddie and Julianne Bell. In relation to agenda item 6.5, Melbourne Metro Rail Tunnel Geotechnical Investigation Program, request to speak from Anthony Vanderkratz. In relation to agenda item 6.6, third quarter March 2015 year-to-date financial performance report, request to speak from Anthony Vanderkratz. In relation to agenda item 7.1, verbal submissions on the proposed 2015-16 annual plan actions, request to speak from Shelley Forbell, Stuart Hamilton, Anthony Vanderkratz. In relation to agenda item 7.4, notice of motion from Councillor Main on the CUB site, an item of correspondence from Ewan Ogilvie. Is there anybody else who would like to address us that I've not read out tonight? Yes?
Hello, yes. I'd like to address...
Sorry, who are you?
6.2, Fiona Bell.
Yep.
I emailed
to 6.2. Thank you, Fiona. We'll add you to that list. Anybody else who'd like to address us? In that case, thank you. Submitters know that we adhere to a 3-minute time limit very strictly. The beep's down at the completion of 2 minutes, and you have 1 minute remaining. Please. Thank you. Please begin promptly, and we will insist that you conclude promptly as well. In accordance with the Council resolution of 26th of March 2013, a 15-minute period is provided at the beginning and at the end of every meeting for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. This is not the time to make submissions, particularly on agenda items tonight. You are invited to address us at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. Is there anybody who'd like to ask us a question? In that case, could I call on Councillor Ong to us? I'm sorry, I beg your pardon. Sorry, go ahead.
Rilke Muir, Kensington, speaking personally, not on behalf of the Kensington Association. I'm interested to see whether Council is responding in any way to Ian Coonan's request recently of Sydney and other areas in cutting down on fireworks because of their high polluting effect. It wouldn't take much of a reduction in fireworks to make a big difference to the carbon emissions of the city.
The answer is no. We've not received any requests from Ian, and nor have we considered reducing the fireworks displays that we have at times like New Year's Eve.
Thank you.
Could I now call on Councillor Ong to assume the role of Chair in relation to the planning portfolio?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There's one report from management for consideration under the planning portfolio tonight. Agenda item 6.1, a Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendment C245, Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No, in that case, I will now call on the speakers. First, I call on Anthony van der Kratz to address the committee. Anthony, you have 3 minutes.
Lord Mayor, councillors, thanks for this opportunity. I cannot help but think that this is a matter of pulling the cart before the horse. I understood we're still in the middle of a consultation process as to the development and vitalisation of the Queen Victoria Market Precinct. However, we find the situation where the City of Melbourne is pushing ahead with planning amendments that predetermine the outcomes of any such review. Whilst I think there is some support for the areas of the proposals in respect to height limits north of Victoria Street, my main concern relates to the south of the market area, particularly near the existing car park. I cannot help but think that we're entering into a period of facadism. The proposed development that take place between the new alignment of Franklin Street and the old Franklin Street, I think, is ill-conceived. It has a minimum height of 20 metres proposed, with a maximum height of 40 metres for a podium. This, to me, preempts the design, restricts very much so any ability to properly consider development on that site. I'm particularly concerned about the proposals to bridge over the existing storage facilities that are there, which I think personally question whether it has any real heritage value whatsoever. It'd be in the interest of the developer and the council to perhaps provide a more cleaner development site. My main concern relates to the proposed extension of Franklin Street. This is an issue that's concerned me greatly, particularly when I was a student at RMIT studying architecture. I unfortunately got the opportunity of witnessing an accident on the corner of Franklin Street and Victoria Street, where I saw a person hit by a motor vehicle turning into Franklin Street and they were thrown into the air 2 metres high. Of course, if we extend Franklin Street and link it up with Dynon Road, which then becomes a bit of a thoroughfare between Dynon Road and Victoria Street, the congestion at that particular intersection will no doubt increase. If there is a case for establishing a park in the inner city area, I would say that case exists for the Franklin Street area between Swanson Street and Victoria Street, integrating the RMIT precinct with the city bars. I think this is an ill-conceived concept in respect to the way in which this planning process has been put forward. I think it should be deferred at best, if not just outright rejected. I think it's going to place undue burdens on the city. We already saw the City Council embark upon a congestion process in La Trobe Street, which has failed. I stood by La Trobe Street today for half an hour and only five bicycles used the bicycle path in La Trobe Street, contrary to the information in this report. I seriously question the merit of pushing ahead with the Council's proposal. It appears to be a fait accompli decision, and all the submissions that have been put in and have been asked to be made are clearly being ignored. I would urge you to rethink this proposal, particularly the proposed extension of Franklin Street.
Thank you, Mr. van der Kratz. You may take a seat.
There's no questions?
And no questions.
You should ask. It's courteous to do that.
I next call on Mr. Tristan Davis to address the committee. Tristan, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you for having me here. Well, while we have some concerns, the amendment might be rushed without some proper justifications for some of it. I wanted to focus specifically here in this short time on elements where built heritage might be most at risk and where smart, innovative development is most needed, being the Munro site. Council's documents and statements in media only mention the Mercat cross section as worthy of retention, but no justification has really been given for this, given the entire site is graded exactly the same as the corner building and included in the heritage overlay. Both main buildings facing Terry Street are graded C in C198, and further investigation reveals a site of many layers and options for retention across there. So on slide one, you see the street facades along the entire length of some heritage value with brick upper levels and circa 1940s shop fronts, contributing to the market's character, as do the arched brick interiors, which now house a number of eclectic shops and cafes. Ideally, this section should be retained in mostly its entirety, as much as the development allows, in front of any new development, perhaps with modifications allowing car access and other things that are essential. Slide two, please. And there you see some of the interior of the revealed parts of the site. Behind those shop fronts, historic timber slats and corrugated roofs, which add quite a bit of character from a number of amalgamated structures which probably date to various periods. There's potential there for them to be reused and opened up throughout the site, with sections retained in between the new development. The success of this small burger place that you go into there shows the kind of activation within an industrial interior that could be multiplied across the entire block, which could be good for it. Slide three, please. In the laneway to the rear, also unmentioned for retention, is this 1880s warehouse, which Melbourne Heritage Action identified and had successfully added to the C198 amendment. Fresh investigation also reveals another possibly Victorian building hidden behind the cladding there in the lane next door. Imagine that junkyard turned into a proper courtyard garden, you know, with the bricked-up building turned into something interesting, again, incorporated into the development. Definitely something worth considering. Slide four, please. And again, you see the extensive bluestone laneway snaking around the back there, which provides through-block possibilities that haven't really been mentioned. It's kind of blocked off there at the back of the site, but just by a doorway which goes right into the back of the Mercat Cross, that could be opened up and turned into a proper thoroughfare through the entire site, with retained sections and new development, and kind of a laneway precinct could be emerging from there below the sheds. So basically the discussion so far sounds as if we'll simply get a fairly generic development. But there's really a lot of options here for more long-term thinking, and the City of Melbourne really leading the way with innovative development on this site, which is something we hope to see rather than a simple car park.
Thank you. Mr. Thanks. Davis, no question. One question for you. Oh, no, you can take a seat.
Sorry?
You can take a seat. And Councillor Leppard has a question for the officers.
Just on the issue raised with the contents of the report, which I understand is a... Not every meeting, Anthony. Cut it out. So the issue of the attachment, which is the review of the built form controls around the market, it does include information from C198, which isn't complete. Is that right? It doesn't include the post-panel recommendations or the council's final tweaks. Is that the case?
And Mr. Meese, you might want to respond.
Through you, Chair. C198 will, as soon as it's with the department and the Minister for Planning, awaiting final approval and gazettal, and once that comes into force, that will apply over the area, the controls in C198.
Heritage but the list controls. Of changes on page 105, which is part of that review of the built form controls around the market, have I misunderstood the nature of that table? I think it's out of date. It anticipates some of the C198 changes, but not all of them.
Doesn't include all of those changes. Okay. That's correct. Yeah.
Does that have a material effect on what we're considering today with the planning scheme amendment?
No, it doesn't, Councillor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meese. I now call on Mr. Peter Papagiorgio to address the committee. Is he here? All right. You put in submission. Did you want to speak tonight?
Not really. I'm not there.
Okay. That's fine. Thank you. Thank you, Peter. On that note, call on a councillor to move. You have another question.
Thank you. Officer, sorry, I thought there might have been another submission. I've got a couple of questions. First for Mr. Mays. On the issue of tower separation, the proposed controls for the development plan overlay aspire to 24 metres but have a mandatory minimum of 10 metres. Can you explain whether or not we're at risk of ending up with... tower separation at that lower mandatory end rather than the higher discretionary end?
Yes, through you, Chair. The provisions propose a preferred separation of 24 metres and a minimum, absolute minimum of 10. And there are a number there. I'm just looking at them now. There are five criteria and guidelines that will allow officers to consider all the variables that do come into play when considering tower separation to ensure that there's no detrimental impact in that tower separation. For example, if there are two blank walls between the two towers, is a different condition as to when there are windows in both sets of towers facing across that area. So that latitude is modified by those criteria.
So the so whilst there's a chance that there could be 10-metre tower separation, the chance of there being habitable room windows 10 metres apart is effectively nil.
That's correct. Look, the intent here is that if there's any detriment, then the applicant has to justify that tower separation below the 24. Yeah. And in looking at that, we take into consideration, or the officer assessing this will take into consideration factors such as those where habitable room windows are looking across that interface.
Thank you. I also had, Chair, one more question for Mr. Adams, if I could. Professor Adams, I beg your pardon. Thank you so much. The proposed condition in Development Plan Overlay 14, the second last condition, in fact, is the only condition in here about affordable housing. It says, where dwellings are proposed on land owned by the City of Melbourne, consideration should be given to incorporating affordable housing. I understand that there's debate as to when we should apply affordable housing to this. Is it here in the controls or is it later in the sale contracts? Can you let us know what the preferred option is from your end and what we could expect in future, given that the design, given that the DPO controls are quite loose?
Through you, Chair. Council has absolute control over both the Munro site and the Southern site. In the development of those and the process through which those will go through redevelopment, Council can stipulate any requirements they would want of that site. Very similar to what happened on the QV site when we bought that. There were certain requirements that the developer was required to provide. That would be the correct time, if Council so chose, to in fact put affordable housing into those proposals.
And so a follow-up question. So given that we're not stipulating affordable housing through these planning controls, Will those recommendations for affordable housing be coming back when we consider the proposals themselves for the towers on both sites?
Council's current policy on affordable housing is to look at a 15% within properties that it redevelops, and therefore the proposals that we bring back to you would in fact allow for that.
Thank you. Final question, Chair. The lifting of height and density controls. Sorry, Professor Adams, one more question for you. The lifting of height and density controls in this precinct would allow us, I think, a good opportunity to do a bit of a case study here about how land values change if we compare what's going to happen in this precinct compared to what's going to happen immediately outside the precinct. Has thought been given to undertaking that research as we undertake this planning scheme amendment so that we've got good data when we plan for future revenue issues like data, value capture and things like that?
There have been discussions. Since we have a known condition here which will change from one planning regime to the proposed, if that is approved, it would not be difficult to actually look at the possible accrued value that would go to developers, including ourselves, in that. And I think it would be reasonable to actually undertake a study to actually identify that improved value.
Thank you, Professor Adams.
Professor Adams, I have a question.
Councillor Watts, you have a question for?
I do, have Professor Adams.
Ah.
I wonder if you could comment, please, on the matter that was raised by Melbourne Heritage Action about the laneways. And you just referred to the QV Centre. I note that we were able to specify retention or creation of the very important laneways of Melbourne. Could you explain to me how that might occur as this development progresses?
Through you, Chair. The amendments on the table today both looks at through block links in the form of laneways on both the Munro site and two on the southern site. It would be anticipated that as the sites are worked up for redevelopment, that opportunities for laneways and linkages through would go into both of those developments, particularly in the north-south direction. Whether those absolutely replicate the historic laneways or, in fact, new introduced laneways, we haven't gone to that detail at the moment. It doesn't specify exactly where they should go, but it does call for those three-block links. Certainly, we would be looking in and around the southern site where the retention of the Franklin Street stores looked at, including laneways as part of the language of that site. And on the Munro site, there is a distinct possibility and advantage in having a laneway connection through that site.
Thank you, Professor Adams. Any further questions from councillors? On that note, I'm call on the councillor to move the motion. Lord Mayor, councillor second the motion. Councillor Mayne. Lord Mayor.
Thank you. We've now allocated nearly $81 million to the QVM project in this financial year in our budget. We settle on the Munro site on the 1st of July, of course, and there is money directed towards the Queen Victoria Market Renewal Fund. Look, we have just completed the third round of consultation about the renewal of Queen Victoria Market, the third round of consultation, and we released that last week. So to be told by Mr. Van der Kratz that we're putting the cart before the horse and we're in the middle of the consultation, or to be honest, by the Melbourne Heritage Group that this is being rushed, is just nonsensical. You know, I mean, 3 years we have been consulting and we have just released publicly. We're not in the middle of anything. We've released it publicly last week. This planning scheme amendment is consistent with the design guidelines we released to the market prior to the sale of the Munro site, and that becomes important. By August, we will have completed the master plan. We have to move to design and document stage. We need to get on with this to commence by middle of 2016. I would offer two pieces of advice. First, to the Melbourne Heritage Group. This is not rushed. This is not rushed. Okay, it's 3 years of consultation, including an upgrade of the Munro site from D to C. And as you've heard from Professor Adams, we do agree with you that the laneway precincts need to be preserved and built upon. So we're in agreement. I mean, I'm a bit sick of this glass half full stuff. To Mr. Van der Kratz, I would say, you know, to tell us we're in the middle of consultation after 3 years, three reviews, and releasing it publicly. And to be told, for instance, the Franklin Street alignment won't work when the benefit cost review shows it performing about eight times better than any road project that is undertaken by state or federal governments is nonsensical and silly. Mr. Van der Kratz, you're addressing us on a number of items tonight. All I can say is, if they are as ill-conceived as your contribution tonight, I would reconsider making them. And as underprepared and under-researched, I would reconsider making them, because you're just wrong about all the things that you put before council after all the hard work that we've done. We're projecting budget surpluses of about $42 million over the next 4 years to fund the renewal, and that will bring the total cash investment available for Queen Victoria Market to about $130 million. There could not be a stronger underscoring of our commitment to this big project. And in the end, it will be, I think, the biggest economic driver of the City of Melbourne in the next 10 years. You know, not for the corporation here, for the City of Melbourne. And therefore, if people are going to comment on it, we expect them to be up to date on what's happening, and accurate in what they say to us. This is a great project. It has been wonderfully conceived by Professor Rob Adams, his team, and the team at Queen Victoria Market, and it should not be the subject of half-informed sniping from the edges.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Seconder, Councillor Mayne, would you like to speak to the motion?
Yes, I think this is a very important moment in the long-term plan to revitalise the Queen Victoria Market. The the planning rules will need to change, and a lot of work has gone into it. There's hundreds of pages of material for those who are interested, outlining the changes. I think the officers have got it right in terms of the density provision on the southern boundary in particular, and the equitable treatment of private owners with the council-owned land, which is an important principle which has come through in what's been exhibited tonight. Obviously, we're in the hands of the Minister, so we're all hoping that the Minister will share our vision, and so far there's no sign that he won't. But we're also seeking the full planning process, so we're not seeking anything rushed here in terms of a ministerial approval. This will be the OTSA panel and then full submissions and a detailed, considered planning scheme amendment before we get to a change. It is interesting that we're not looking at anything on the value capture side, specifically with land valuation uplift. So obviously that might have been an option for us to try and share some of that value, but I think with the way that the approvals had been going with the previous government, that it was probably difficult to ascribe changes in value to this planning scheme amendment versus just the actual experience on the ground of permits that were issued quite near the market in some cases. It's a very transparent process, this. Our full draft master plan is out there for everyone to see. We were very public in terms of the guidelines we released in the middle of the bidding for the Munro site, and this is a fully transparent process. And as the Lord Mayor said, we have gone through three comprehensive rounds of consultation, and I personally was very heartened at the tone that came back in the latest Kapaya report, where there does seem to be really broad support for what we are doing. And in previous times, we've had dozens of traders in the room, angry, upset with concepts, and I think that us purchasing the Munro site has very much put much of the concern to bed, and that we'll be able to cater with the parking on the Munro site. I agree with Tristan that the design of that car park will be very important, and we need to very carefully consider all the options with that, and obviously the design of this iconic new open space will be a vital feature, and it's terrific to see the rezoning proposed that will reflect that this is public open space. So that's probably enough for now, Chair, but a really exciting day, and I look forward to this project moving forward with construction starting next year.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Any speakers against the motion? Any further speakers for the motion? Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be supporting this motion as well. There are a few things here that are absolutely fantastic. I think that the zoning away from capital city zone to public parks and recreation zone for the new open space is important, as is the rezoning to public use zone for the market itself. This is a better application of zoning than capital city zone, and it better reflects the nature of the market and what we'd like it to be in the future. And whilst we've been talking a bit about the built form controls, of course the land use controls are quite important as well, so I don't want us to not mention those today. But on the built form controls, let me just say a few things. We are uncapping heights on some sites, but we're doing it in a way which creates a whole lot more nuance at that podium level and below. I'm not opposed to height per se, I'm just opposed to the cheap density that can come with lifting heights without capturing an adequate amount of return to the community in terms of community infrastructure, in terms of good design, in terms of tower separation, in terms of adequate light and ventilation. As we've heard today, we've got some tower separation controls that are, as far as I can tell, stronger than anything we can see in the Hoddle Grid and South Bank. And so that in itself is leading by example. I take the answer to my questions earlier that the 10-metre mandatory minimum isn't simply that, but that there are a whole lot of controls in place to ensure that we are going to be looking at towers that are adequately separated here, so I'm confident that that will be the case. But we're also doing a whole lot of other things on this site to prove that the uncapping of heights isn't just resulting in cheap density. Given that Council is owning these sites and is committing to all the things that it committed to in the contract with the state government, including the new Franklin Street and car park arrangements. We've also got other things like the potential there for the childcare centre in the Munro site for affordable housing, as Professor Adams has mentioned. And so in this instance, I absolutely support the uncapping of height and the nuanced approach to the built form controls at the bottom of those towers and around the podiums, because I think the benefit to the community is going to be absolutely wonderful in the long term. So on that basis, I think that we should be supporting the built form control changes today. I mentioned the issue about value capture earlier because I think that this is going to be a fantastic case study if we do look at how the value of the land changes as a result of the uncapping of the height controls on this site. I think it's very important that we as a council properly keep that data and compare that data with neighbouring sites where we're not changing the built form controls, so that we've got really solid information upon which we can make future decisions about how we'd like to investigate value capture schemes. Obviously, the current developer contributions framework is inadequate, and we're not really undertaking any developer contributions scheme in association with the Queen Victoria Market Renewal site, but I'd really like to be in a good place to investigate these sorts of things in the future. So hopefully this sets the way for doing that sort of thing, and maybe we can talk about that a little bit more in future as well. The last thing I want to just say is that the this is the first time that the public has seen the proposed built form control changes. I absolutely accept that there have been three phases of community consultation on the Queen Victoria Market renewal as a whole. The first two phases were very high level and talked about themes and what we'd like to see the market's uses be in the future and why we value the market. However, today is the first time we've looked at the built form controls, and I do have some nervousness, although I'll be wholeheartedly supporting this motion today. I did have some nervousness that we were considering this before the results of that third round of consultation were analysed and formally received by this council. However, there are sections of this report which make it clear that the outcomes of that third phase of consultation are generally consistent with what we're looking at here. And of course, what we're doing today is requesting the public exhibition of this planning scheme amendment so that we can see what further consultation will come out of that. So for the reasons I've cited there, I strongly support this planning scheme amendment. I think it's a tremendously exciting project, and I look forward to seeing what comes out of the public exhibition process.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Any other speakers to the motion? I'll speak to the motion. First of all, I'd like to commend officers from Professor Adams, from City Planning, Strategic Planning, Property Services, all have been involved with this project over the last, well, couple of years or more. And I also like to commend the Lord Mayor for leading this project. From the point of view, if we look at the history of the Queen Victoria Market, previous attempts to try to do something has failed miserably. Now, in the sense that it probably looked at a too narrow a scope. What we have here is a very strategic level project that looks not just purely at the market, how the market operates today and how it could operate tomorrow. It's considered the changing environment of the city north. It's considered the changing lifestyle of city dwellers. As the city has changed so much in the last 6 to 7 years, we have seen increased population in the cities. We have seen less people driving to the market, more people walking and taking public transport to the market. The idea that we can increase the density around the market for future residents fits perfectly well with how we intend the future of this market to be. And I also want to raise the point. We have been to the public. We've been to the public, the traders, to and fro about what the traders want and what they don't want, because we all know this is a major project. We've put a figure of about $250 million up front. Biggest ever project the city ever attempted to take on. Something this big means it's big change. And we all know change is something that scares everyone. And the process of taking our time and talking to people, the work that the QVM board has provided in terms of all the background information, the history of the site, the feedback from the various groups of traders, you know, even among the traders, they are split as to what they want to do in the future. I think All of that's been captured in the previous two. While this is a planning scheme amendment about the whole precinct, the change, the DPO, the change in the height controls, the change in the design controls. It's not just about height, as some of the speakers have mentioned. The tools that we put in there into this planning scheme amendment is based on experience from statutory planning. They've seen what other things have happened in the city. We have seen certain cheap densification, and other parts we've seen good. So we've taken a lot of the experience to make sure that when these controls are put into this DPO and the DDOs that are going to come in, they've considered what has gone wrong in the past and how we're going to control this. It's not just numbers, height, numbers, separation of towers, numbers, setback. It's also about how each building will treat each other and how each building will treat the street and the environment and the amenities. So I think the work done by the office on this has been tremendous. Now, if I look at it, the issue of affordable housing, you know, we've debated this last year when we were talking about housing policies. We still haven't come up to a clear conclusion. Yes, it would be great to put in affordable housing. Affordable housing to me is social housing, supported rental housing, affordable housing for public renters, and for affordable to be owned by people who want to actually own properties in the city. We haven't addressed those issues, so there's still work to be done. And as Councillor Leppard said, we don't have the tools to even add in developer contributions within this scheme because the current Planning Environment Act actually doesn't allow us to do this. We tried in the central city. We failed because the panel says you actually are not allowed to do these things. So I think we still got work to do in terms of what the final outcomes to achieve the best that we could for this area. I would like to see included in the designs or even in the proposals when the sites go to market to make sure that some of the housing are also designed for disabled people. You know, there are projects around in the country that I've seen. We are a city for all people. So this part of the city, which we hopefully call this Federation Square of the North with the open space, will become a space where people will use, a place where people will come for festivals, community gatherings, their shopping, meeting other people, socializing. It's not just purely about which building looks better than other. It's not just about this heritage building should be protected or that C-grade or D-grade building should be protected, because in the end, we have to take an overall 100-year view of where this thing is going. So I fully support what's been put forward. We still have one more process. The minister may and may not appoint a panel. It will still go to public exhibition. More submissions will be received, and I suspect that submissions will be going beyond what we have seen from the people who use the market and the traders. It will go throughout the development industries, the planners, the architects, and everyone will have a say of what they like to see here. So I look forward to the next stage. Lord Mayor, I pass it back to you. Thank you. On that note, I'll put this to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hands. I declare it carried unanimously. I will now call on Councillor Wood to assume the chair of the meeting in relation to the environment portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Ong. There is one report from management for consideration under the planning portfolio, which is incorrect. Agenda item 6.2, Flemington Road Oval Works, and I'd call on Director of City Design, Rob Adams, to make a presentation.
Through you, Chair. Background to this report is there is a master plan in place from 1997. It's almost 20 years old. I'm fortunate enough to work for this organisation when the first master plan went in 1984. And this one, in fact, builds on that master plan. As people are aware, when there was proposed to be a northeast link, the Linking Melbourne Authority gave money to make improvements, and those improvements started both in Princes Park as well as the Flemington Road Oval. Important to know that the master plan states that no lights, sports lighting, should be provided at the Flemington Road Oval, and I'll talk to that in a moment. What is changed in the 20 years since that master plan was put in place is an incredible increase in sporting activity, and I'll come to that. And it's also important to know that, in fact, with the construction of the Children's Hospital, there was a loss of one of those ovals. In talking about the subject, both Heritage Victoria and the Royal Children's Hospital have not indicated that they have any concerns about the lights going in. This gives some indication of the increase in activity that's occurred within the municipality in terms of sporting and sporting requirements. And this is from 2005-06. The number of clubs has risen by 36% today over that 10-year period. But more significantly, the number of teams that are actually playing in our facilities has risen by 49%. This is a continued pressure that we have, and there are not many opportunities, in fact, to make spaces available of this size. We are fortunate that there is an oval coming into Docklands that will help us in meeting this, but otherwise we need to meet it on the facilities we have. If we go back to 2005, we can see that there was an oval where the wetlands have gone in that has been lost, and there was an oval here that when the Children's Hospital was moved has been lost. In fact, there's much that's changed in this plan in detail as it's been implemented. If you note the car parks that were put in, again, that were of concern to a number of members in the community, in their detailed design, have in fact been integrated into this landscape. This is the park as it is today. It is a completely different park to the one that we had back in 1984. It has, in fact, achieved, I would argue, most of the objectives that were set about in 1984. The tree canopy is extensive. Sporting facilities that were here with, in fact, a pavilion that sat there have all been removed. Parking that sat here has been, in fact, incorporated into the landscape. This oval that we're talking about has now got extensive tree canopy around it. And what is being proposed is that lights will be placed in the four spots that are indicated there, those lights being over 100 metres away from the nearest residential unit, and those lights face into the oval, not towards those residential units. The lights are designed to, in fact, focus light wholly on the oval and to minimise the overspill. If you think of the environment, lighting environment, and if I could go back, sorry, the single biggest lighting source in this area is not going to be the oval. It's going to be the light that spills from this hospital, which through its essential services is going to have the lights on most of the night. It is, in its bulk and in its size, going to have an overspill of light into the surrounding area. In conjunction with that, if you imagine that you have six lanes of traffic and traffic lights adjacent, this is not an area that will be in darkness. You will get an overspill of light into that. So I think already, while the park talks about having dark areas, and there are many of those, this is not one of those areas. This is the oval as it exists today. You can see the proximity to the road and the street lighting, and the hospital sits in here. It is not part of the discussion, but it has come up in some of the submissions, so I'm indicating where the pavilion will go in, and in fact the master plan contemplated a pavilion. Under section 48 of the master plan, it says the two Flemington Road ovals, a small pavilion constructed in conjunction with the existing tram services building, could be considered. Tram services building is here. Now clearly when there were two ovals, to have it central would have been a better idea. With only the one oval, proximity to that oval is mostly more sensible in terms of its inclusion. So, councillors, I put it to you that there is a strong argument, given the sporting activity that needs to be supported in this municipality, the incredible improvements that have been made to this park, that lighting of this particular oval is something that would not be detrimental to the park.
Question, Councillor Mayne.
Yeah, compelling argument, Professor Adams. Is there any way we can replace those two lost ovals? Is there any other opportunities within the park that we can add another couple of ovals?
With extreme difficulty. I suppose there was the option it was countenanced as part of the return to Royal Park. But in fact, the community feedback we got from that was while there should be places to kick a ball, and there are, that in fact what was required was something for the children of the city, and hence the playground. I cannot think of locations where they are. We have certainly... Seems to have frozen on me. If you could go back, I'll see if I can go back another one. No, could you take me back a couple of slides? Yes. Unfortunately, it's bleeding off. There has been consideration at some stage about whether at the top of this diagram, I think it must be the battery in this thing, because it's not giving me a pointer. Anyway, at the top right-hand corner, we can see the golf course. If you could, in fact, take the two of the fairways across to the other side of the railway line, there's an opportunity there to maybe modify some of the ovals there and give you a bit more room. But you'd mostly lose one oval to get, you know, two better ones in that location in the triangle up by Park Drive. But that's the only consideration that has been looked at. It is with great difficulty that we get any ovals into the city at the moment, given the density of development.
Any further questions for Professor Adams? Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. Thank you, Rob. And I agree that the photos between 2005 and 15 are quite impressive, the number of trees. But my question, there's concern been raised in some of the submissions about the exclusive use of this oval for one or two sports. But my understanding is that the casual use of local schools or community groups is still a possibility in this space.
Absolutely. As a long-time member of the city, there are many times when the ovals are not being used for active sport. Many times early on in the day when they're used for many other functions. So, yes, they are programmed for sport, but they're not programmed the whole time for sport. And on the occasions that they're not being used, and I myself have availed the use of those for cricket and other activities of a casual nature, they're available to the public. So I think it'd be wrong to think because it's an oval that the only people who get to use it are, in fact, the clubs. In fact, I haven't got a figure on the percentage of usage, but I'd be surprised if they're used for anything like 25% of the day for active sport. It wouldn't get anywhere near that.
Any further questions for Professor Adams? I've just got one, Rob. If this were to pass in terms of the light towers, what sort of usage would we be looking at in terms of time of year and then even hours that they'd be used overnight?
It's intended that the lights won't be used past 9 o'clock of an evening. They will not be used in summer because daylight saving, you wouldn't require the lights to be used. So their maximum usage would be about this time of year when you're going to be using them from about 5 o'clock through to 9 o'clock. So they would be used for approximately 6 months of the year, possibly slightly less, running into spring and autumn. The thing I also neglected to mention is that we will be providing solar panels on the pavilion and also in Princess Park to offset the energy use of these lights. So it's in keeping with our philosophy of not just providing more light. The concern of many people have been the skylight that actually goes up into the sky in terms of astronomy and all the rest of it. Given that they turned off at about 9 o'clock, a lot of those activities could take place after 9 o'clock, and most probably do anyway.
So can I just a follow-up? It's not every night of the week that these lights would be utilised as well?
It's not every night of the week, okay. No.
So how many nights are we looking at?
Is Graham here? Graham, how many nights of the week? Three.
Great. Thanks, Rob. You may take a seat. I now call on Joe Edmonds to speak. You've got 3 minutes, Joe. A buzzer will sound and you've got 1 minute to wrap up.
Lord Mayor and councillors, we've just heard an explanation for what amounts to a very opportunistic approach to the events of last year and the possible loss of Rostraw Field. This development simply comes out of the fact that money was given to the council to allow them to create more alternate ovals for competitive sport because of the possible, but because of the prospective loss of Rostraw Field. Now, Rostraw Field hasn't been lost. There's been no net loss of sporting fields in because of the possible because Rostraw Field has been saved. The development in Princes Park has made more sporting ovals available for competitive sport. What we're concerned about is that the master plan envisages a balance of use. Every oval in Royal Park is tenanted and dedicated to competitive sport. Where's the balance that that's talked about in such terms as clause 47.5 of the master plan, where it says facilities should be designed and managed to extend their appeal and value to the broader community rather than maintaining an exclusive focus on a single use or select club. That's the issue that concerns us. We've never been consulted about the pavilion. It looked to me quite large compared to the tram facility there, and so we're interested in keeping the mix, the recreational mix that exists at Rostraw Field for all the social players, after work players, the ethnic groups, and the other non-competitive sports that they have. They have their ideals expressed in the terms of the use of the ovals. We oppose what council is heading to do, is intending to do, and we think that you should keep faith with the master plan. It seems to be a very ad hoc way to trash the master plan that you don't even invite the public to consider. If it is 20 years old, it's time to consider a reworking of the master plan. That surely should mean public consultation. But to present us with a fait accompli...
Thanks, Joe. Any questions for Joe at all? Lord Mayor.
Joe, I have a question for you. In fact, I have two. You spoke about the balance in Royal Park, and would you concede, given Professor Adams's presentation, that there has been actually a net loss of one oval from Royal Park? And secondly, in terms of the consultation you ask us to undertake, your petition says there's light spill and excessive noise for the Royal Children's Hospital. Who did you talk to at the Royal Children's?
Well, other people will address you on that issue, Lord Mayor.
Joe, your petition says that yes, there is excessive noise impact on the Royal Children's.
Yes, that was
we've spoken to them. I'd like to know who your group spoke to at the Royal Children's.
Right. Well, one of the other speakers will address that issue, Lord Mayor. As to the loss of the oval, tell me how sport has been improved, particularly organised sport, as a result of the fantastic expenditure of money in Princes Park and the lighting of that park.
But that's a different issue, Joe.
I maintain still that there's been
no. Joe, that's a different issue.
Can I just...
You talk about balance, Joe. That's a different issue. What I'm asking you to confirm is there has actually been the loss of an oval in Royal Park, as Professor Adams said.
Well,
in fact, two ovals when you look at the overall picture over the last 10 years.
So, Joe, if you could just answer that question, thanks.
Was that what the money was given for, was it?
Joe, if you could just answer that question, acknowledge that there has been an oval lost, and we'll
two
move on.
Ovals.
We'll move on.
Well, before I answer that question, I want to know what has been the gain from the redevelopment of the sporting fields in Princes Park. The two. One's
all right, I'm going to close it there because we're not getting anywhere here. Any further questions for Joe? Joe, you may take a seat. I now call on Kay Oddie to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Thanks, Kay.
Lord Mayor and councillors, I'd like to make a preliminary comment. I noted in the officer report that key interest groups were consulted about the Flemington Road works. The Friends of Royal Park were not consulted. Given our relation to and involvement in the park, why wasn't our group consulted? And sorry, I should have prefaced that I speak as secretary of the Friends of Royal Park. The proposed lighting towers at the Flemington Road Oval in Royal Park are an intensification of sports use in Royal Park. In the Royal Park Master Plan, this oval is intended to be an informal sports ground, and I quote the recommendation from the Master Plan. It should be maintained to basic standards while remaining essentially open space parkland. It should retain minimal built features to support use with no off-street parking or night lighting. Lighting towers are not consistent with the oval being essentially open space parkland. Why do we see intensification of active sport uses in Royal Park, but no compensatory increase for passive recreational uses of the park? The intensification of sports use of the Flemington Road Oval is referred to as compensation for the loss of the second Flemington Road Oval and was proposed to preemptively address east-west link losses of Rossdraw Fields. The east-west link has been cancelled and the Rossdraw Fields are retained. However, given the increasing population of Melbourne, why isn't Council proactively seeking new open space areas for developing more dedicated sports facilities and, importantly, for new parklands, where Council's open space, urban forest and biodiversity policies could be applied? Instead of intensifying active sports uses in our existing parks, one has to wonder why Council is not earmarking Council depot sites in North Melbourne for redevelopment as open space, instead of proposing 40-metre high-density development under the Arden-Macaulay Structure Plan. In conclusion, I ask that the lighting not be installed at the Flemington Road Oval and that Council proactively seek alternative sites outside the park for intensifying sports usage. Thank you.
Thanks, Kate. Questions for Kate? Lord Mayor. Be nice, Lord Mayor.
Always, I hope, nice. Kate, you say there's been no compensatory dedication of space given active space. Isn't it true that, in fact, the whole celebrated mound, now so beloved of the park, actually had a pavilion on it and was active space and was compensatory in terms of providing that sort of space for Royal Park?
I think we have to, and with due reference to Rob Adams, as I was around in 1984 too, I think there's been a mammoth change in the development of the master plan, and so that we really need to just start at that point instead of going back to the 1920s and the 30s when all of those...
No, this is very recent. That pavilion was removed and that was turned from active space into the compensatory space that you claim there was none of.
That was predated the master plan, if my recollection is correct.
But it's been compensatory, has it not?
But then you could say, well, all the intensification of the lights of all of the other ovals is you've got to balance it, Lord Mayor.
Exactly
right.
We've
had the intensification of sports uses on a lot of the ovals, and we've had that downgrading of the circle area more for passive recreation now, and I think you'd agree that it's a very well-used passive recreation area.
Yeah, exactly, and that would be my argument about balance, would it not? That if you lose two ovals and you get a very large space, then the one remaining one, it's compensatory, is it not, that you actually make that available for active use where there were three ovals before?
It's the intensification of the use that we're saying you're intensifying by putting the lights in and making it more for dedicated sport with the new turf and the irrigation. And we're saying that we really now need to start looking at other areas for dedicated sporting facilities in the municipality, and I think that's a big problem.
But hang on, I was just criticised by the previous speaker for doing exactly that at Prince's Park. That's exactly what we are doing. And I would have thought 3 down to 1 would require intensification of the 1, wouldn't you think?
No.
Okay.
I don't agree. Sorry.
Okay. Thanks, Lord Mayor. Any other questions for Kay? Kay, you may take a seat. Thank you. I now call on Julianne Bell. Julianne, you've got 3 minutes to speak. And a minute to wrap up once the buzzer sounds.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. I'm speaking on behalf of Protectors of Public Lands Victoria and a huge coalition of Inner Melbourne groups who campaigned against the East-West Link. I find it depressing to have to attend this meeting to defend Royal Park, Melbourne's unique bushland park, once again to oppose the alienation of parkland for development of formal sports facilities. Professor Adams does not appear to realise that it is a unique bushland park predominantly. The City of Melbourne was complacent in carrying out the wishes of the previous state government to advance in advance of a final decision being made about the East-West Link. Council was paid $13.2 million by Linking Melbourne Authority to build sports facilities in Royal Park and Princes Park to accommodate sports groups which were threatened with being displaced from the Rossstraw Field by the East-West Link. Now, Linking Melbourne Authority has been liquidated and the East-West Link terminated. Rossstraw Field in Royal Park has been saved, which removes the rationale for construction of sports facilities on the sports ground in Flemington Road. We're opposed to the proposed installation of sports lighting. It's not in the 97 revised Royal Park Master Plan. There are no sports lights on Rossstraw Field, so there was never a need to install lighting in replacement facilities of the Flemington Road Sports Ground. Light spills will illuminate the western buildings of the nearby Royal Children's Hospital. This is detrimental to the health of patients, to the amenity of residential area, and is contrary to the rationale for locating the Royal Children's Hospital in Parkland. Professor Rob Adams said last year, for the moment the intention is that lights are tightly focused on the playing surface and do not have light spill. Well, they do have light spill, and I have got here how the light spill will occur. Light spill will destroy wildlife in the section of the park, retain growth of vegetation, destroy Royal Park as a dark park, where astronomical observations, public viewings are conducted. Exposure to light at night brings risk of breast and prostate cancer and is recognised in Europe and USA, if not Australia. There is a dispute about the pavilion. There was no consultation about it, the pavilion, and Heritage Victoria putting it through. It's ironic that tonight our colleagues are gathered at Moonee Valley Council meeting to congratulate and thank the council. If I could just finish a sentence.
I'm sorry. Very quickly.
While we are forced to deal with the legacy of the East-West Link in the City of Melbourne, thanks to Council's failure to oppose this project.
Thanks, Julianne. Any questions for Julianne? Lord Mayor.
Did you say, Julianne, that the exposure to light causes breast and prostate cancer?
Yes, it's a scientific... There's plenty of scientific evidence to... and it's recognised in America and Europe.
I have no more questions.
Okay, thank you.
Well, with your...
Sorry, Julianne, thanks. That was the question
with
answered.
With your...
any other questions
consent,
for Julianne?
I will send the Lord Mayor some material.
You're welcome to. He'd welcome that, I'm sure. Any further questions for Julianne before she takes a seat? Please take a seat, Julianne. Thank you. I call on our final submitter, Fiona Bell. Fiona, you've got 3 minutes and a minute to wrap up.
Lord Mayor and Councillors, I'm Fiona Bell, Convener of Friends of Princes Park, Member of Protectors of Public Lands and the Royal Park Protection Group, and a resident of Princes Hill. Now, I want to object to these lights and the proposed pavilion. There has been a great lack of consultation, but one of the things that the lights will dominate the skyline, look very unattractive for a heritage park, and the night noise from the sport is bound to affect local people as well as, we suspect, all the children, the patients in the hospital. Now, although some people have said they haven't complained about it, I don't know who was asked. Now, the other thing is, City of Melbourne prides itself on sustainability, and I think we'll find that the Princes Park sports lighting doesn't use electricity from sustainable resources, and although you're saying that there's some solar lighting panels, I don't think they'll be powering the four lights around the oval, will they? The lights around the new area of the southern playing fields of Princes Park, that is nine big towers, they will use approximately 200 houses worth of light power, and all this will come from the grid, the Hazelwood coal-fired power station. That's not sustainable. The actual poles themselves, they're all made of steel. I think you all know the carbon footprint of steel, that these are all not sustainable. So, City of Melbourne, I think you run the risk of ruining your reputation for sustainability. Now, I walk in Princes Park each day, and I know also that the City of Melbourne can be rather irresponsible about lighting in their sporting fields. There are two ovals which currently have lighting, and sometimes the lights are left on all day, and at other times the lights are on but no one's home, no one's playing on those empty fields. A terrible waste of electricity, and I expect the same thing would happen here. The Flemington Road Oval, it doesn't need unsustainable lighting, and I think although Royal Park was saved for posterity from the East-West Link toll road and doesn't now need to be ruined by inappropriate so-called development with non-sustainable lights and pavilion. There's been a few token things like rainwater for flushing toilets spoken about and the solar panels, but basically the sustainability issue is quite severe. Thank you.
Thanks, Fiona. Questions for Fiona? Fiona, you may take a seat. You can take a seat. There's no questions. We'll just get you. Can someone switch off that microphone up there, please? I now call on a councillor to move a motion.
Actually, I have some questions.
You've got some questions of officers. Sorry, Councillor Watts.
Could I speak to you, Professor Adams? Just if you could clarify, one of the speakers mentioned that the Friends of the Royal Park were not consulted. Was there a reason for this?
I need to seek clarification from Graham, otherwise come back to you. My understanding is that there was full consultation that occurred with the East-West, including what was happening at Flemington. In fact, there were letters also sent out to a number of the affected parties, and there was no response to those. But I haven't got that information here. I can provide it to you.
It won't be relevant after tonight, but I thank you. The other thing I would like to know, the people who are going to be using it for these three nights a week, they're external to the city, the clubs, or are they local clubs?
Graham, can I seek your guidance on that?
I see. And another technicality, please, if you don't mind. The money that we receive from the Linking Melbourne Authority, some of the speakers have referred to this being an opportunistic development on our part. The money that we receive, could it have gone elsewhere, or are we obliged to use it on this oval?
We're obliged to use it. The money that we were given and have now been paid out in full before they were dissolved was dedicated to both Princes Park and the Flemington Road ovals. We cannot spend it anywhere else. What it did in Princes Park was in fact bring forward the master plan by about 10 years. So there's nothing that happened in Princes Park that wasn't part of that forward master planning. So effectively what's happened through East-West, irrespective of whether the road goes through or not, is we've actually advanced our agenda within our sporting capacity by about 5 to 10 years in terms of our capital works budget.
So the constituents coming tonight are quite correct, aren't they, in feeling uninformed that the plan is old. You've already said that yourself, 20 years old. That would explain their anxiety around not knowing what's going on.
I think there was a lot of consultation around East-West Tunnel and what the compensation was going to be on the sports pavilions. The reason this report is with you tonight is the lights on the Flemington Road Oval were the only things that weren't already agreed by you in master plans. So that's why it's here tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks, Professor Adams. I'll now move, call on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Mayne, call on a councillor to second that motion. Councillor Ong, Councillor Mayne.
This is a very straightforward decision. In my mind, if another level of government gives you $2.72 million to improve a piece of sporting infrastructure when there's great need and demand for sporting infrastructure, not just during daylight hours, then you would happily take that money and get on with the investment. So these claims about we weren't consulted, I mean, frankly, it's pretty obvious what you would have said. I mean, nothing we could propose here would ever satisfy some of your extreme demands that the park be locked up exclusively for passive use. Now, this park is a shared park. It's been used actively for many years. The master plan has this as an active reserve. So it didn't say take it out. It says this is an oval that we use. So all we're doing is we're extending the use of that by 3 hours, 4 hours a night, three nights a week and a few months in the year so that more children, adults can actively participate in sport. And I just find it amazing. I now sort of better understand how we haven't yet put a public toilet next to our new wonderful playground there next to the hospital because of the level of extreme opposition and hardline positions that get taken obsessively all the time by the same people who are such a tiny minority. Tiny minority, unrepresentative of what the broader community. If you polled the community these facts, if you did a people's panel on it, you would get 80, 85% who say, no brainer, someone else is funding it, park's already there, just get on with it. And we get accused of not consulting, we have to listen for endlessly, and, you know, I just find it very frustrating. This is such an obvious decision. The hospital is fine, Heritage Victoria is fine. And I just think it's unreasonable that our officers get subjected to this sort of level of accusation and tedium that comes from the same old, same olds. So I just think we should get on with this. We've brought it here. This is consultation. You have now submitted. We brought it here because it wasn't in the master plan. And I think now we should get on with it and do it and get on with other things that some of these submitters have stopped, such as a no-brainer like a public toilet next to our new park there on the avenue. So we should get on with that, get on with this, and stop having NIMBYism getting in the way of sensible investment in the City of Melbourne.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. That was quite clear. Seconder, Councillor Ong.
Thank you, Chair. I think the mover has addressed quite a lot of issues. I'd just like to add one point to it. The Royal Park, during the East-West Link debate, we found out that it's 160-plus hectares. It's a huge place. I've been there. We walked through there. We go to the zoo. We walked through different parts of it. We even had a visit of councillors and officers during the East-West Link debate. There are many parts of Royal Park that you can shoot a rocket during the day and you won't hit anything or anyone. It all depends on your usage at what times and so forth. It is very clear through our recreation, Graham Porteous reports, that the demand for space for organised sports going on in the city has increased. We can see from the graphs. The city is growing, a lot more people in. We encourage more active sports to get more get people more healthy rather than sit and not move around. So now we are trying to add a few hours a night or a few days a week for a few months a year to ensure that we get a bit more usage out of a fixed asset. I can't see what's wrong with it. And to get that usage, that means we may need to put some lights in, and the lights spill is not going to spill into everyone's lounge room or bedrooms, because by 9 o'clock it's switched off. And if there's an issue about not being switched off, council officers will look at why they're not switched off. Now that's an operational matter. But to just say we don't want light towers is depriving users of an open space within 160 plus hectares, which can be used for organized sports, recreation sports, and just people to run around with their kids and kick a ball. So I can't see what's the big fuss.
Thanks, Councillor Ong. Any speakers against the motion? Any other speakers for the motion? I'm actually happy to support this. I do want to make the point that it was in some ways opportunistic because the funding was put there, but I take the point that most of this work, the majority of this work, was part of the master plans for both Royal Park and certainly for Princess Park as well. The only sticking point is obviously the lights being explicitly stated as not being part of the master plan, but I think what we've got here is a situation where if the only justification was the road, then that rationale has gone. But I think there are still many other reasons as to why I will support this, despite the master plan explicitly stating not to have those lights. The loss of the ovals previously, greater recreational use, and I think an interesting argument is the opportunity to actually concentrate formal recreation better in this part of Royal Park, which would then strengthen the protection of the dark parts of the park. And I think that people like Kay and Joe, who actually have wonderful input into our public policy, I think that that should strengthen your arm in terms of protection for other parts of the park, that if we're going to concentrate our formal recreation here on this oval, then that should that should strengthen your arm. So although I'm not ever overly comfortable with doing something that's in an agreed master plan, I take to the point that that master plan was 97. It is time to look at updating it. I don't think that time to update it is now. I do agree with some of Councillor Main's points about the fact that this is a designated oval. What we're looking at is extending the life of that oval for a few hours in the evening during winter to allow more people to recreate. That is a good thing. That said, we're going to see increasing conflict between formal recreation and wild open spaces, passive open spaces, as our city grows. I resent the point that was made by one submitter that we're not doing anything to try and address that. We've got a recreation plan looking at these exact issues. We've got an open space strategy which we're striving to implement in every way we can. I think we've done some wonderful things when it comes to open space with peeling back asphalt and introducing those open spaces, so I do resent that that point. So I think, you know, it's wonderful that we're actually having this discussion where we're not going to have a road through Royal Park, and now what we should be looking at is moving on from this situation, formalising that recreational space on that oval, and then better protecting the passive and the dark spaces of the park. So I'll be supporting this motion tonight. Any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Watts.
I too will support this motion. I've been convinced by officers and others that a proper investigation has occurred, for example, with the Royal Children's Hospital. I specifically asked on that matter, and I'm reassured that if the Royal Children's Hospital doesn't object, well, that's that. I'm concerned that we have acted opportunistically and that we can't walk away from that, and that's probably a difficult thing for local people, but it's a reality in the way in which the city operations occur. What I am unhappy with, and I am deeply unhappy, that my colleagues would take this opportunity to belittle
constituents who come along and argue their case. Because we don't agree with them, or some of us don't agree with what they're saying, there is no need to be disrespectful, and I hope not to hear that in the future.
Thanks. Thanks, Councillor Watts. Any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Oak.
Neatly following on from Councillor Watts, I've been looking at my notes and they're going round and round and round, but I am also I'm reluctantly supporting this motion. It's not actually a no-brainer, as Councillor Main suggests. It is actually a decision that we're making that does go off a master plan, and master plans are important, and they've been developed in a way that makes them incredibly important that we stick to what is in them, regardless of how old they are. If they are so old, then why haven't we reviewed them? If that is going to be an argument, then let's get on with reviewing the master plan if it's so far from where it should be today. But I do resent some of the comments that have been made, and I do resent some of the submissions, but I do also respect a lot of them, and I also disagree with some of the comments about some of our submitters as well, considering that Royal Park wouldn't be as it is today without some of the people in this room, especially people like Coyote. And it is an incredibly important space in our city. We don't have dark parks in our city. This is our only one. And it does support important biodiversity, and it does support important passive recreation. Again, areas that we don't have very many of in the city. And as we know through the east-west debate, it is the only part of our city with remnant vegetation. And thankfully that has been saved. But that said, I also, before the east-west considerations came before us and before the threat of the sporting fields within this park was apparent, we were at pressure point in terms of use of our sporting ovals within the municipality. Our Parks and Gardens Advisory Committee many times have had advice from officers about the lack of active open space in our area, in our municipality, and there is a threat to our passive spaces as a result. So if an oval has been designated in the master plan and we're suggesting that we can increase the use of this active space a few hours in winter through these lights, if that does decrease the pressure on passive spaces within our municipality, then I am inclined to support it for that reason, I guess, alone, understanding that we do need to support active sport, but I don't support alienating any designated passive spaces within the municipality for that purpose, and I don't believe that this oval necessarily is considered only for passive use. So it is actually reluctantly I support this. I think it's important that we do own the fact that we're going off the master plan, but I think that the reasons that have been put to us for going off the master plan, for these lights, for this short amount of time and not for exclusive use is actually important given all the other pressures that the municipality has for other goals that we have.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. Any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Leppett.
Nice one, Chair. Look, I think that we should have given notification of the works at the pavilion, and if we shouldn't have, then certainly Heritage Victoria should have. Let me just say that from the outset. I think that we could have done that a bit better. But obviously this debate is all about the lights, not about the pavilion, so let me get back to why I'll be voting for this motion today. I agree with Councillor Oak that we do have to own up that this is a clear diversion from the master plan, and for that reason it isn't a no-brainer. The master plan goes into an enormous amount of detail and it underwent an enormous amount of consultation when it was written, and an enormous amount of research as well to land where it did. And as Councillor Oak as well said, this is our only dark park. This is our prize park where we have passive recreation space, and the theme throughout the master plan, as opposed to every other park's master plan, is that Royal Park is the place where we protect our passive recreational spaces. We do not let the active recreational spaces impose and encroach onto that passive recreational space. There are reasons why the master plan is written the way it is, and I do wonder if everyone here has read it. So I think that the submitters today have every right to be upset because we are taking a clear diversion from the master plan. Yes, the Linking Melbourne Authority was the catalyst for this, but we have to look at the reasons that we're having this debate more broadly. We do have things like the open space strategy and the recreational plan, which are trying to get more open space into the municipality, and we're doing everything that we can do there. But that isn't keeping up with the pace of growth in our city, and we often have this debate. And as Councillor Wood said, the friction between passive and active spaces and the intensification of use of ovals and sports grounds is only going to increase because we do not have the tools available to us to get the rate of new open space that is required for the forecast population. Look at the mess that's been made in Fisherman's Bend with the lifting of land values before the purchase of land, and I'm not confident that there's going to be an adequate amount of new sports grounds down there. Look at the mess that's been made in Docklands. I think compromises have been made there where they shouldn't have been made, and look at the compromises that we have to make today. That is the reality that we're working in. That is the context that we're working in, but for the reasons cited by others, I think that the only decision we can make today is to support this motion. That's because we do have to go back to the master plan and look at those themes that come through that master plan. The reason I'm supporting this today is because I do respect Royal Park as a dark park, as a park with intense indigenous vegetation, including remnant vegetation, and a park that respects its passive recreational uses. The way to keep the pressure off those passive recreational areas is to intensify use of the active recreational areas. We've lost an oval underneath the Children's Hospital, and so we're down net one oval since what the Royal Park Master Plan envisaged, and in fact we're down two since 97 because we did convert one of those active ovals to wetlands and turned that into passive ovals, so you know, a passive space. So we've already worked in one direction and now we're working back in the other direction. But because we've lost that oval here, I think that we do need to intensify the use of this oval so that we're keeping the pressure off the rest of the park. I'm very nervous about the question that was asked before this debate about what other areas of Royal Park can we convert into ovals. I think that completely misunderstands the purpose, the nature, the entire basis of Royal Park, and that is a terrifying concept. The reason I'm supporting this is so that we do keep the pressure off the rest of Royal Park and we intensify that area there. So that's the reason I'm voting for it today.
Thanks, Councillor Leppett. Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Chair. This is meant to be a robust forum, and it is. And it is the reason we have proposals before us, that we test the assumptions that are put before us. You can't just come here and make an assertion and have it held as fact. You know, that needs to be tested in this robust forum. So we can't be told that the Royal Children's Hospital will be negatively impacted by petition, when in fact the Royal Children's Hospital say that is not the case. You can't just claim that there has been no compensation of passive space to active space when the facts say that we've gone from three down to one ovals. You know, those things have to be tested here. They can't just be put before us as assertions. You can't just say we have alienated parkland when, in fact, the master plan shows exactly the opposite is true. You can't just say that, you know, you're opportunistic because we've brought forward the master plan for Princes Park by 10 years because the government made money available to us. You can't just say you haven't consulted because we talked to you about this during the East-West Link, as we would recall in this forum at great length, when we did actually talk about that, including the treatment of this oval. And so I'm sorry, this has to be a robust, not a one-way street. And if what is put before us as assertions are demonstrably wrong, then that must be challenged in this forum. Otherwise, where else will it be? Where else will it be? And therefore, I make no apology for the robustness of this. And in the end, when I am told that, you know, light towers cause cancer, I just find that, you know, factually offensive. And therefore, I will certainly be supporting this tonight.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Main.
I take on board the comments by everyone this evening. And I'd like to pick up Councillor Oakes' comment about Coyote and acknowledge her tremendous protection and advocacy for Royal Park over a long period of time. I guess I was just reacting to the Lord Mayor's sentiment. And having seen the hundreds of emails and endless letters and, from some people, in my view, constant hectoring on these issues. And I reacted from not just tonight, but enormous paper trails, many over-egged claims, repetitiously made over long periods of time. And I think that's starting to affect sensible decision-making, because it's too much trouble. You'll get hectored to death if you try and do a public toilet next to a wonderful park. They're too ferocious. And sometimes I just think you've got to be called out. If you're overplaying your hand, stretching the facts, and I think on this one, and someone else is funding it, of course it's not a no-brainer because the master plan says something slightly different. But I think if this does prove to be a unanimous vote, and you know, I think that is a very strong mandate for the logic and the power of the argument, which has been so vigorously resisted by some people that we hear from very, very, very regularly. So that's all I've got to say. I think we should support a sensible investment funded by someone else that will improve active recreation in the City of Melbourne for a large number of people.
Thanks, Councillor Main. I think we've well and truly heard all sides tonight. I'll now put that to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hands. That is carried unanimously. I now call on Councillor Pinner Mortimer to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the Marketing Melbourne Portfolio.
Thanks, Councillor Wood. There's one report from management for consideration under the Marketing Melbourne Portfolio, Agenda Item 6.3, Melbourne Spring Fashion Week 2015. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No? Well, no, I'd like to then move this recommendation on the screen. I call for a councillor to second the motion. Deputy Lord Mayor, thank you. I'd like to say a few words about this. Melbourne Spring Fashion Week is a terrific success each year. And 2015, I think it's its 20th year, promises to be as exciting as it has always been, particularly retail connection program. This is an initiative that really drives retail visitation and has a tremendous economic, direct economic impact with a citywide retail shopping night and weekend activation. Another key success of Melbourne Spring Fashion Week is something that's dear to my heart, is the involvement and engagement by educational institutions from Holmes Glen to RMIT, Kangan, through to White House. And it really has done a lot to acknowledge and give those emerging designers a real go. So I'm all out for all the hard work of the team and recommend this report. Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor. Yeah, look, I support everything that you have just said, but I'm so proud of Melbourne Spring Fashion Week because we are the only capital city in Australia that a council actually owns and operates and presents a Spring Fashion Week. And the whole purpose of it is to get the cash registers working and to revitalise our wonderful boutiques and fashion houses that we have in the city. So I'm very much looking forward to this week, and thank you.
Are there any other speakers for this motion? Councillor Watts.
Thank you. I'd just like to draw attention to the way in which the design sector in our city is enhanced by this. There is, obviously, its major thrust might be retail, but there is a whole other layer to what we're doing in relation to design and bringing on the fashion industry of the future. And I'm very pleased to support this.
Are there any speakers against the motion? Any further speakers to the motion? If not, I'll put the motion to the vote. All those in favour? Unanimously voted. Thank you. I now hand over to Councillor Foster to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the People's City portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Pinder-Mortimer. There's one report from management for consideration under the People's City Portfolio, Agenda Item 6.4, Draft Reconciliation Action Plan 2015-18. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item?
No.
Okay, in that case, I'll move the recommendation on the screen. Is there a seconder? Councillor Watts, thank you. All right, well, this is actually the third Reconciliation Action Plan that Council has put forward, and it continues to develop on the previous RAP. that had a very heavy focus on employment, rightly so, with 18 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander trainees gaining employment through that RAP. Some of those, I note, though, are still working with us today, and there are others of the 18 that have moved on to other jobs using that opportunity as the springboard that it was intended to be, into other jobs both within and outside Melbourne. So this plan goes to, again, focus on employment, but also to focus on a new relationship with the Victorian Aboriginal Childcare Agency, focused on improving outcomes for young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children and, of course, their families. So I think this is another great step forward, another example of a very well-prepared reconciliation action plan to go out for consultation. So I thank Ian Hicks and the work of his team in putting it together. Councillor Watts.
I would agree with all that you've said. I have a natural impatience with these plans that we do our best and we have initiatives happening, but clearly more and more has to be done. I note and reiterate that this is a draft reconciliation action plan, and I really look forward to the input and encourage further input. That's what the draft's for, looking forward to hearing what people have to say about it.
Any other councillor like to speak in favour of the motion? Councillor Lippitt.
Thank you, Chair. Just briefly, because I know we're sending this out for a bit of consultation, but I think the content's very good and I agree with the words of the mover and the seconder about the qualifications to that. But the thing I'm most excited about is the reform to the way we're going to implement this strategy. I think that the Directors Forum taking control of the oversight of this strategy is a significant shift to what we've done in the past. I think that it's fair to say that one of the criticisms of the current RAP, or the previous RAP, whichever way you'd like to look at it, is that we've found it difficult to implement all of its components. But with that new oversight of what is a good collection of actions and initiatives, I hope to see this next RAP implemented well, but of course that depends on what we get out of the consultation, and I generally support what's in there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Any councillor like to speak against the motion? Councillor in favour, Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Chair. I obviously support going out for a consultation, and I just wanted to add my support for one of the new initiatives around establishing the forum with businesses and institutions within our municipality who also have RAPs. There are a lot of common themes, a lot of common goals, and I think working together will make it not only more efficient, but I think there'll be a lot of great ideas that come from working together. And I know that RMIT and the University of Melbourne have got some great Indigenous or Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander programs for within their organisations, but also within their precinct as well, including online maps of their campuses with information about significant sites within their jurisdiction. So, anyway, I look forward to developing that further.
Any other councillor like to speak for or against the motion? Councillor Riley.
Thank you. Yes, I look forward to this not being a draft and being implemented by the City of Melbourne.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Any other contribution to debate? No? In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. I'll now call on Councillor Oak to take over as chair of the meeting in relation to the transport portfolio.
Thanks, Councillor Foster. There's one report from management. We're looking at agenda item 6.5, the Melbourne Metro Rail Tunnel Geotechnical Investigation. Would councillors like a presentation on this matter? No, I hear none. I now call on Anthony Vanderkratz, who's requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. As you know, you've got 3 minutes.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. I wish to take this opportunity under this agenda item to raise issues that I raised 2 weeks ago, or at the previous meeting, I should say. I note that there is no real concept plan for the Metro Link, and there's certainly no sectional diagrams that have been presented. My concern is whether or not this geotechnical report is going to take into consideration other issues, particularly in respect to the crossing of the Metro Link tunnel underneath Punt Road, and whether or not the design strategy that's been embarked upon by Metro Rail will also include and give consideration of a possible future road tunnel under Punt Road.
Any questions to Mr. van der Kratz? No, thank you for your submission. If there are no other questions of management, I call on a councillor to move a motion. Councillor Main, seconded Lord Mayor. Councillor Main.
Yes, look, the decision was taken to call this matter in, I think just because it's good to give people an opportunity to submit. It's good to make public the application for the permit. We had public debates with public decisions on boring requests, drilling requests related to east-west. So I think it was consistency of process and decision-making that we call this one in and not just do an officer permit issue. As to the content, I think it's not particularly controversial. It's 140 boreholes and it's detailed as to where they are likely to be. I think that if you consider the debate we had earlier about some lighting on an oval, we'll have that debate 500-fold in terms of the impacts of this project, all the way along the line and drilling and depth and cut and cover, and we're going to be, you know, Faulkner Park impacts, and so we're going to be debating this for years. So this is probably the first time it's come to us. And I'm looking forward to supporting the project. I know the council does has previously supported the project in our transport plans, and tonight is the first opportunity to put our hands in the air for something related to Metro Rail when it is official government policy and it is full steam ahead. So this is going to happen. It's very exciting. We will be pressured and prevailed upon on various elements over time, but it's nice to start from a position of Council wants to see this get done. Supporting this initial permit is a first sign of political support from the Council that we're behind the project. We really hope it succeeds, and this will just be the first of many, many times we'll be involved in decision-making around this very exciting project.
Thank you, Councillor Main. Lord Mayor, as seconder, would you like to speak?
I support a geotechnical investigation as part of the East-West Link project. It's only consistent that I support it for the Metro Rail Tunnel, and I do.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, for your contribution. Councillor Ong, you'd like to speak to the motion?
Thank you, Chair. Just to say this, I support this because, as we all know from the previous experience with the East-West Link, these are very, very, very early days. What's important is the next stages and the details that come up, and when the government puts out to the public exactly what will be done where, and the technical information on all the engineering surrounding this. Now, personally, I'm still interested to see the engineering report on 10 metres under Swanston Street. Yes. Councillor Wood, do you know the respect of other people speaking? I stopped that.
Rohan, Councillor Leppard, you'd like to speak Councillor to the
Rohan's
motion.
Fine. Unlike the geotechnical drilling on the East-West Link, which was a direct contradiction of the policy of this council, the Transport Strategy 2012 and the standalone resolution we made in 2008, which objected to any works associated with any East-West Link, I wholly support this motion because it's absolutely at the centre of our transport strategy. This council supports Metro Rail 100%, and I support this motion 100%. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Councillor Wood, would you like to add to the debate?
Well, seeing as we're all speaking... Sorry, you, Councillor Ong? Bit of respect, thanks. Sid pro quo, as they say. I will. It's a little bit like Groundhog Day for this in some respects, because sticking to the item at hand, the geotechnical drilling that we're looking at approving tonight. The first of the geotechnical drilling actually was taking place in 2008 for this project. So it's actually wonderful to see, as Councillor Main said, to see it happening full steam ahead with some decent budget behind it, and hopefully this is the start of what will be a very successful project for Melbourne.
Sorry. Thank you, Councillor Wood. Are there any other speakers to the motion? If not, Councillor Main, as mover, would you like to speak?
No.
Before I put the motion to the vote, all those in favour, raise your hands. Carried unanimously. Thank you. I now... I now hand over to Councillor Main as chair of the planning. Is it planning or
finance?
Finance and governance. Sorry, Councillor Wong. Yes, sorry, Councillor.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Oak. There are two reports for management for consideration in the finance and governance portfolio. The first is agenda item 6.6, which is the third quarter year-to-date financial performance. I think we probably don't want a presentation on this. I'm happy to move the motion on the screen. Is there a seconder? Oh, sorry. Anthony, 3 minutes.
Councillor Main, thank you for the opportunity. Apart from my concerns that I expressed in respect to the hypnotism video that the City of Melbourne wasted $1.5 million producing, I'd like to raise some concern over the $1 million loss indicated by Cityworks. There seems to be very little detail as to what the basis of that loss is. It raises my concerns, given that the reports that I've read is that the CEO of Cityworks is paid something around the vicinity of $600,000 annually. Sorry?
Citywide,
sorry, my apologies. Citywide CEO is paid somewhere around the vicinity of $600,000 per annum. I'm questioned whether or not that money is well spent, and I would also like to ask how much money is being paid to members of the board of directors of that organisation.
I haven't got that data completely to hand, Anthony. I'll happily send you an email.
Well, you should know about it. $600,000, money not well spent.
Well, I mean, I think...
Perhaps you should know the CEO is no longer there.
I know that the positions
that they've... So I'm happy to move the motion on the screen. Is there a seconder? Councillor Wood. Okay, so, I mean, first I have to thank the officers for doing a great job with the numbers. Fu Nguyen, who's here, and Mark Stormer were $2 million favourable on budget, and we're likely to come in with an underlying surplus of $8.47 million based on the figures for the first 9 months to the end of March. We've had very good growth, and the underlying budget figure doesn't actually capture the strength of the financials in the sense that the open space contributions from developers from the boom has been the major contributor to the fact that we're $14 million ahead of budget in terms of capital contributions, and that's because they go into the open space reserve, which is now very healthily sitting with a balance of around $15 million. So the boom has delivered some extra revenue, which is seen in these numbers. Our rates revenue is also $1.4 million ahead, which reflects the boom in terms of supplementary rates, and parking is also a couple of million favourable, which is a good efficiency of the operation. So well done to the administration for that. So overall, it's good numbers. Yes, there will be another underspend or carry forward of our capital works budget, which has been something that has happened in recent years. That's not fantastic to have that, but at least you're not blowing your capital works budget, so you're just carrying it forward. So, but overall, and I think on the citywide comment, I think it's actually inaccurate to refer to it as a loss. It is a lower than budgeted profit, is the factual description of citywide. And one extra disclosure piece we've actually done in the last, starting with I think the last quarterly reports, is to break out the Queen Vic market figures and the citywide figures, so there's transparency as to where the overs and unders are coming from, whereas previously we were just saying council subsidiaries. So you're able to ask that question, Anthony, specifically because of a transparency measure we've introduced in the last few months. And I point out that citywide has delivered back to the council over $100 million since it was introduced, and I don't recall any money going the other way over that 20-year period. So it's been a great investment for the council. It's never made a loss. It's still making healthy profits of $6, $7, $8 million. Yes, the profits were up above the 10 for a year or two there when it was booming. It's been tougher market conditions, and I've got full confidence in the new chair, John Brumby, and there's an acting CEO in place at the moment. But the previous CEO, Kerry Osborne, despite your comments, did a fantastic job over a long period of time creating enormous value for the city. $100 million in return. So I think it's a bit unfair to only focus on losses and overpaid CEOs when it's actually a terrific long-term financial story, as is borne out from any examination of the figures. So that's all I've got to say on the financials. So, Councillor Wood.
Thanks, Councillor Mayne. I agree with you. The numbers are good. It's interesting how one submitter submitting on each item is essentially driving our debate, so I won't touch on that, though I am glad you made the point about the significant value over such a sustained period that Citywide has delivered to us, and certainly in tougher economic conditions and with more competitors in the market space, I think they're holding their own and we'll expect good things for them for many years to come. So I'm happy to commend this, and once again, well done to our officers in managing our budget so well.
Councillor Wong.
Thank you, Chair. A good report overall, not just to FOO, but I think for the whole organisation. If you look at the page 6, which is the income statement, you can see clearly that all parts of the City of Melbourne's organisation have achieved a great outcome. Income's up in all areas other than the small project income area. The key parts of finance and inter-revenue, we won't discuss this because we know the interest rates are down. And then when you look at expenditure, other than depreciation and grants, everything is running ahead of schedule. So that shows an organisation that's focused on delivering results and doing it better than what they planned and they expected. I commend all employees, CEO, directors down. The other part that I want to mention on is also the cash flows. If you look at the statement of cash flows to year to date, we are 29.9 million positive cash flows. Now, an organization like this, and we know that we are under pressure all the time to deliver services and increase and sometimes unforeseen circumstances, this is actually a very good result. We're talking about QVM. We need a positive cash flow. We need a good outcome so we can fund our projects for the future. And you can see as well in the capital works year to date, the new works, the works that people always chase us on, get things done. They're ahead of the budget. We've got some renewals that we need to finish, but I'm quite sure that by the end of the year, financial year, we should finish all that and we would be close to 99% completion in capital works, maintenance and renewals. So all in all, I would say a tremendous outcome, knowing that we will have a negative cash flow for the next 6 months after July the 1st, when we have to pay out a big property we bought near the Vic Market. But overall, I think a tremendous result.
Any other speakers? Put that to the vote. All in favour? Declare that carried unanimously. Agenda item 6.7 is the allocation of the discretionary fund, third quarter 2014-15. I'm happy to move that item on the screen, Councillor. Seconded by Councillor Wood. Don't need to speak on this one, Wood. Okay, any in favour?
All in favour.
All against? Declare that carried unanimously. And now call on the Lord Mayor to resume the role of Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. There are four items of general business. The first is verbal submissions on the proposed 2015-16 annual plan and budget. And could I call on Shelley Forble from the East Melbourne Group to speak to us for 3 minutes. Shelley. Oh, sorry, in that case I'll call on Stuart Hamilton to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Thank you.
Three minutes overall, fine. Well, two matters are aircraft noise and Wellington Parade. Firstly, on aircraft noise, we put in a short written submission requesting the inclusion of the development of a fly neighbourly agreement in the annual plan actions for 2015-16. We think it fits well within Council's plan of goal one of council plan, which is a city for people, and either can be added as an action under priority 10, strengthening partnerships to improve community safety, or added as a new priority within that goal. The problem is that general aviation aircraft are flying in increasing numbers in a circuit around inner Melbourne. The noise is now severe, and on weekends it's essentially continuous. It's been measured as equal to that measured by Air Services Australia monitoring terminals at the runway ends at Melbourne Airport. The main source of this noise is helicopter joy flights leaving Essendon Airport and student pilots of fixed-wing aircraft from Moorabbin Airport. Joy flights typically conduct two circuits, student pilots many more circuits, which we understand is simply and needlessly done to accumulate hours for their private pilot licences. It's uncontrolled airspace and has been only since 2011. That means the pilot's free to take his or her own route according to variable criteria that they might have, crossing over an area mainly to the east of Melbourne, but not just. It can include the Government Precinct, Treasury Gardens, Fitzroy Gardens, etc., and also obviously the residential area of East Melbourne. It has a major impact on Melbourne and East Melbourne residents and visitors visiting the various important sites around the city, particularly near Fitzroy Gardens. We ask that the Council develop a fly neighbourly agreement. We're perfectly well aware that the Council doesn't have constitutional responsibility for aircraft regulation, but the Civil Aviation Safety Authority does provide for local councils to develop such agreements as guidelines for the flying, overflying in particular local government areas, and we believe such an agreement would be of great use in lobbying that has to be done to try and regulate this sort of overflying. We're not saying there shouldn't be, but we're saying it should be along predetermined routes in Paris. Aircraft like this aren't allowed at all. In New York, helicopters have to fly up the rivers. In Singapore, again over the river, in the world's most livable city, we think Melbourne deserves a similar treatment. Thank you. I do have something to say on Wellington Parade, but if my 3 minutes are up, my 3 minutes are up.
Talk quickly, Stuart.
We've put in a submission seeking that a Wellington Parade master plan be added to your action list. We've noticed since we put in the submission that you have actually included $100,000 in the draft budget, which we welcome, but we want to see coordinated action taken on Wellington Parade, which is probably the poor relation of all the major boulevards into the city. There are a
must
great opportunity...
Be there, Stuart, because time is up.
Okay.
Could I make two comments to you? Well, let me ask you a question first. My only nervousness about a fly neighbourly plan is that I wouldn't want to raise expectations among East Melbourne residents that putting such a plan in place would be efficacious in removing that aircraft noise. You know, I hope I, you know, do your residents understand that it's pretty much a symbolic gesture on behalf of the council and is no basis for advocacy or direction from us?
We understand that, as I said, it's not the City of Melbourne that can actually affect change here, but we believe it's slightly more than merely symbolic. We think it indicates the will of the local council supporting the local residents, which we believe would be helpful in lobbying that we are continuing to do with help from local councillors and state and particularly federal members to try and influence regulation by the federal government.
And secondly, this is not reflective of councillors. I'm not trying to reflect anybody else's view, but purely from my own view as a councillor, I wouldn't want that to be a lever by which you join council as an advocate with you, that this would, you're asking us to do it as a standalone action which you as a resident group could use without further reference to council.
I think that's a fair characterisation of what our intentions are, Lord Mayor.
Thank you. That is very helpful. Stuart, can I just say on the 18th of June we do have a special meeting where we look at the annual plan and budget. I can commit to you that as a group of councillors we will look at that. Can I also assure you that Councillor Oak has been a most assiduous advocate on your behalf for such a plan, and while not prefiguring what the outcome might be, for both of the issues you have raised, the 18th of June meeting is a vehicle by which we can consider both.
Thank you.
Of course, Ken. Yep.
Stuart, in your presentation and also in the submission, you mentioned in 2011 the regulations were changed without consultation. Who changed that?
I believe that was the federal government.
Was it a federal government? It's a CASA thing.
Yes, CASA.
Were we told about it? I can't remember.
Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. If I may, at the beginning to indicate that South Yarra residents also share the concerns in respect to air traffic noise and nuisance. It affects us equally as it does East Melbourne residents. We're 18 months away from the next municipal election, and there's an ongoing concern that there is a need for the council ideally to take an adversarial role or an advocacy role in reviewing the electoral process. This issue was raised previously. We're now getting closer to the next deadline for the municipal elections. Now would be an appropriate time to build into the city plan some form of review where the City of Melbourne can take to the State Parliament, either the Electoral Matters Committee or directly to the Minister for Local Government, proposals to review the electoral procedures. I do this particularly because I was somewhat concerned and dismayed at the last municipal election in 2012 when Team Doyle received 38% of the vote, whereas the Greens received 14%. Team Doyle only elected three of the delegates to this council, plus the Lord Mayor, of course, which is a separate election. And the Greens managed through a distortion in the preferential proportional system to elect two councillors. Now, anybody who undertakes a serious review of the methodology used in counting the vote, as stipulated in the Local Government Act, would realise that the Greens only got there by virtue of the fact of this distortion. Not by merit. Had the vote been properly counted on a full preferential system, independent candidate Kevin Chamberlain would have been elected instead of Councillor Leppard. I believe that it's important that the City of Melbourne takes a proactive role and that it undertakes its own review and makes its submission forward to the Minister of Local Government as to how and in what basis the legislation should be amended. And I'd ask that the City of Melbourne seriously give consideration in undertaking such a review in an open and transparent manner.
Thank you, Anthony.
No questions?
The next item of general business is a notice of motion from me, actually, and I'm happy to move the notice of motion. Councillor Wood, thank you. Very appropriate from a former member of the Future Melbourne Committee. Look, we need to prepare for the next council a view about the structure following Future Melbourne. We're very well familiar with the way it has worked for us. This proposes a way forward for the CEO to acknowledge and to advise us on how we might build on, certainly not toss out, but build on the Future Melbourne structure. And all it does is empower the CEO to begin that process. Councillor Wood.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. As you rightly said, as a member of this process previously, it was a highly successful process. I think over 15,000 individual contributors to the Future Melbourne plan, and it's been a very successful plan for City of Melbourne over a long period of time. I look forward to building upon that success with this new process, whatever that may be.
Thank you. Is there a further speaker to the motion? In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, that is unanimous. Thank you. Agenda item 7.3 is noted for motion from Councillor Mayne regarding the MAB State Council on the 15th of May, and I'd call on Councillor Mayne to move the motion standing in his name.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. If I could just ask that the motion be submitted. So I think that's been circulated, and I'd like to invite Councillor Leppard actually to make a minor amendment that I'm comfortable with. He'll have to do that orally, though.
Certainly, Councillor
Leppard. This is on behalf of Councillor Chamberlain, of course. Can I add to part one, please, after the word...
Like identical twins. You're like identical twins.
Dodd, that was a low blow. Part 1.1, after the word council in brackets, can we please add, indicates general, and then supports becomes support, and then can we delete the words with the exception of the following and change that to... Sorry, indicates general support for or motion. So okay. Delete that, we'll come back to it. Can we go, please go back? No, just delete that.
No, can we just have
one person
shouting?
Yeah.
Show some respect.
Kevin. Indicates general support for all motions. Support. Can we get rid of the S at the end of support, please?
It's
is it? Okay, I can't see it, sorry. I generally can't see that far. Okay, at the end, can we have but specifically opposes the following? So delete four. Yep. I apologise, I couldn't see that strike through. But specifically opposes the following. And as an explanation here, I'm giving our delegate a get-out-of-jail-free card here. We don't want to indicate absolute support for everything. It's general support and just giving the specifics to the things that we oppose so that we're not all giving blanket support to everything other than that. I think that tweak speaks for itself.
Thank you. Is there a seconder for this motion? Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Councillor Mayne.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. So, look, we're trying something new here with MAV, where we're seeking official council guidance in public as to how we will vote at this coming Friday's State Council meeting. As the delegate over the previous four State Councils, I've often felt that I've had too much power to operate in the dark because it's a secret ballot and I've had no consultation with my colleagues and I can vote however I like. And seeing as we put up a motion calling on better governance of the MAV to actually have some guidance from councils before they vote, particularly on things like presidential elections and board elections, that it would be hypocritical to then go up there and do the usual secret dark vote again. So here we are, and it was a big exercise going through 63 motions over the weekend to come up with a considered opinion. And with the help of the officers, and Jack Hanna in particular, and Keith Williamson, we've picked out three we don't like, which is Mildura wanting to hand over all local roads to the state, Banyule wanting longer to do the four-year plan at the start of the term, and I think it was Bayside wanting the retention of a CEO REM survey, which you can get from the annual reports anyway, so we don't feel we need the survey. So there's a few others in there that are pretty colourful and interesting, but we are effectively here saying we have general support for all of them. And the last point, if we can just scroll down to that, which I think is actually quite interesting, is that we are calling for a report back to FMC2 on July 14 as to how our four motions go this coming Friday. And we've also asked them to put in how we've gone at the previous four state councils, because I think Melbourne's actually had the worst batting record of any council with our... This will make probably 15 or 16 motions we've put up, and we're probably batting at about half. We're probably batting at about half. So I think it'll be interesting to get a report that shows everything we've suggested to our peak body, what has been supported, and shockingly, in my view, some of the governance and transparency measures that have been rejected, and another sensible gender suggestion that was rejected. So as we move into a period where the MAV needs to reform its governance, I think it's important for the capital city to be active in that process, to be on the record with our previous positions we've put to them, to have voting transparency on how this organisation has treated our suggestions, and I think that will give some weight to the broader argument about a sensible response to the Auditor General's quite damning report on governance and practice at our peak body. So that's why we're doing this tonight, and we'll see how we go on Friday.
Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I too am very uncomfortable with the current paradigm at MAV State Council, where everything that Councillor Mayne moves has a 40% no vote from a standing start. It's a very difficult regime for you to work within, Councillor Mayne.
You're agreeing. You should be used to it.
I also note, Councillor Mann, I support this wholeheartedly and I thank you for the work you've done. I note that you put the motion that we agreed to a few meetings ago to encourage all councils to do exactly what we're doing here today. You also put this notice of motion before us, which allows us to go through all of the motions and determine our general voting position. I'm curious to see how long this new regime holds for. It's a lot of work. Thank you for doing it all. I also feel a little bit sorry for Jack Hanna, who I assume is going to have to implement part four of this motion. Thank you, Councillor. I think there's a lot of work to be done here, and good luck as you do that for this meeting and in future. I support the positions that have been set out here, and good luck on Friday.
Thank you. Is there a further speaker to the motion? In that case, I'll put the motion. Those in favour, that is carried unanimously. Thank you. Item agenda 7.4 is a notice of motion from Councillor Mayne on the CUB site.
So moved. Although, Lord Mayor, I have a slightly amended version on the screen, which is the deletion of... I'm moving the amended motion on the screen.
Thank you. Is there a seconder for that motion? Councillor Wong. Thank you, Councillor Mayne.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. The idea with this motion is the CUB site is a huge site, 22,000 square metres, That's, you know, 2.28 hectares. It's a massive site. It's been a bit of a blot on the landscape and an eyesore for a long period of time. It's got 11 lots with some diverse ownership. And there's been some development on the southern portion of the site, but there's a feeling that the minister, as responsible authority, probably should go back and have a look at the various master plan incorporated documents, comprehensive development zone arrangements for the balance of the site, to make sure we get a really good outcome in terms of the open space and the public realm. So quite a bit has changed in the city since this first master plan was put together. It is an important site. We do want to see development continue, and once that revised master plan, if it does come forward, we've also got 1.4 here where we're asking the minister politely, as usual, to potentially return the responsible authority role back to the City of Melbourne, because this is one of those sites where it's carved out of the planning scheme and the whole site is just over to the minister, whether it's approvals for signage and posters, as we've discovered, or overall approval of large development proposals. The minister was responsible for everything. So as an observer, effectively, we've looked at the development and just feel it's time to have another look and to try and maybe secure a better outcome. And 1.2 has been removed, so we're not on the record asking for a fast change. And instead, we're simply asking for the minister to look at it, and he will choose the appropriate speed or tools within the Planning and Environment Act that he thinks is appropriate. We're simply asking politely to have a look at this, and we're keen to try and secure some good outcomes on public realm and open space and built form, which fits into the context of what's already happened and the growth in the city that is envisaged.
Councillor Long.
In addition to what Councillor Mayne has said, I think it's important to note that this site has first sat vacant for about 10 years before it was then master planned with an incorporated document. What we've seen is a certain set of built form coming up on the southern side on Victoria Street and up Bouvery, and one little old pub sitting on the corner of Swanston and Queensberry. The rest of the northern part has been vacant, a big hole in the ground. It's got a sort of a wire fence on it, and it's about time that when it gets developed, we should look at what's happened on the south and then look at what should happen in the north to allow a better and improved outcome, both in terms of height, built form, true connections, open space and amenities. I think the minister should look at this seriously and expedite it.
Is there a further speaker to the motion? Councillor Watts, a question, of course.
Just explain to me about why we're the last underlined, I mean, point three, allowing for some public disclosure. Is there something we don't want disclosed, or isn't public disclosure?
Well, I mean, it's a capital city zone. The minister's responsible. The minister is not compelled to disclose, and so we're asking for some disclosure.
I'd prefer the sum to go, but could I move
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I'm happy to remove the word sum.
Is the seconder happy with that? Then it's okay to remove the word sum.
Thank you.
So it just means public disclosure. It's an extent issue, so it may still be some, but anyway, that's fine. But all are agreed on that. Thank you. Is there a further contributor to debate? Sorry, Councillor Lever.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Oh, sorry, contributing to the debate?
Yes.
Thank you. Just on that issue as well, before I make the rest of my remarks, the reason for those words there, because I did suggest those changes, was not to suggest that we should limit the amount of public disclosure, but to suggest that without that FMC meeting, there may be none at all. So it's about saying there should be some, whereas there's a high likelihood that there might not be any. But the change is perfectly fine. Thank you to Councillor Mayne for moving this, and also for incorporating some suggestions that I've made. On that basis, I will be supporting it. The difficulty I have with this issue is that with this one pager that the notice has been given, it wasn't clear, and we're not currently clear on the public record as to why it is that the current development contribution, comprehensive development plan, I beg your pardon, is not giving clarity. And this afternoon, in fact, we did get a submission from the Carlton Residents Association Planning Subgroup, which did reiterate that point. They make a couple of points. There is currently no evidence that the existing planning controls are failing to provide sufficient certainty. They also say that the existing controls have not prevented developments which vary from the building envelopes described in the Comprehensive Development Plan, and they make a few other points as well. I think, therefore, we need to be very careful when we're talking about this issue, because the perception out there is that we're urging the Minister to change the built form controls, not really explaining which direction we want that change to happen, but asking that those changes be expedited. So I think it's very, very right that there is a little bit of nervousness there. So with these changes, the reason I'm going to vote for this, and I've framed it in my mind this way, is that we would like a better outcome. We'd like an improved outcome for the community in terms of open space and public realm. And we'd also like to ensure that if there are changes, that there is at least some disclosure into that process, public disclosure, whereas there's a high chance that there wouldn't be any. The usual way this happens is the Minister will do it at the stroke of a pen. But there isn't actually a proposal on the Minister's desk yet. This may have been slightly premature, I'm not sure, but I agree with the crux of why the mover's moving this, and that we would like to facilitate a better outcome here. The site is an eyesore, as was in the original motion, we should be doing what we can to improve the site. So with these changes, I'll be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Is there a further speaker to the motion? Could I just add one little bit? I did seek some advice from Governance and Legal about whether I would have a conflict here, because the owner of one of the sites here, the Queensbury Hotel, was actually an attendee at a fundraising function. To me, the advice to me is that given the distance from any application, there is no proposal before us, and more importantly, that we are not the decision-making body, that there is no such conflict. But I did want to make sure that was so. If, of course, that site did come before us for any sort of advice, then there would be such a conflict, and I would declare that. I also agree with this because it's an advocacy thing. I think we've been very successful as a council in advocating against the bomb sites, and I think of three. Collins Street just below King Street, now the Leighton's headquarters, the Savoy Hotel, and the historic Argus building. In each of those cases, similarly to this, we had no power over any of them to ask for them to be upgraded from the bomb sites they were, and yet over the last 4 years, each of those sites has been returned to great public use and no longer a bomb site. I think of Collins Street. You know, I remember looking down on it from 555 Collins in 1995, and it was a bomb site then. So very long histories, and with nothing more than such advocacy and raising of public awareness, we as a council have got great results in those three different sites. This is a much bigger one, but I support Councillor Main's motion to bring this to the Minister's attention in order to move this development forward entirely under his control as it is. Any further contribution to debate? Councillor Main, do you wish to conclude debate?
I want to thank the Carlton Residents Association for the submission, and my colleague on my left wing here who proposed these amendments, which were responding to the CRA. And I think they have improved it and made it acceptable for unanimous support, particularly the more specific comments on the open space and public realm. So thank you to Councillor Leppett for, as always, diligently improving the wording of all of us to achieve a consensus outcome.
In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That is unanimous. Thank you. Are there any? This concludes the items of general business. Are there any items of proposed urgent business? We provide a period, of course, at the end of each meeting for questions from the public. Anyone like? Yes, Julianne. Please go to the lectern.
Thank you. Before I ask Councillor Main a question, I'd like to point out, following his rude comments, the extraordinary number of groups that were here to comment about
Royal
Park.
It is very plain in our rules. This is not the time for a submission. It is time to ask
a
question.
Well, I'll ask Councillor Main, does he actually know what groups were presented here tonight? Is he aware of the principles of democratic representation? And does he propose to eliminate participation of resident ratepayers groups in proceedings? And or, like Borondara Council, is doing away with public question time?
Thanks, Julianne. Look, I've quite proudly been involved in advocating to try and make Melbourne the most open and transparent council in Australia, whether it is audio on the website or introducing public questions at the start and the end of meetings, responding to submissions from the CRA in relation to the CUB site. I'm a big believer in public consultation. I've got a bit frustrated that that the level and ferocity and persistence of your group and some of the people who hold your views, in my view, are now having a sort of a disproportionate influence because you've worn us all down and you're not worth disagreeing with. And so I guess tonight I'm disagreeing with you. I'm really disagreeing with you. And I'm going to put up the public toilet and you'll disagree with me on that as well. And that's just the way democracy works. We'll have the public discussion. You'll always be able to come here. But ultimately, decision makers will make decisions. You'll make submissions. We'll have a public debate. And that's how it operates. And you'll always be able to have a good hearing here and fundamentally support your right to democratically express your views.
Thank you. No, Julianne, this is not the time for debate or submission. That time is over. If you have a further question to ask, you may do that. But that it is restricted to that. Yeah.
It's a question about Royal Park. It's come to our attention that hot air balloons are landing on the grasslands just to the north of the Children's Hospital. They land, the trucks come and deliver the hot air balloons, and the passengers, people,
Julianne,
come with...
It is a time for questions, not submissions or statements.
Well,
or
I have to tell you what's happening.
No,
it's
no,
dangerous.
It is a time for questions.
Yes, okay. All right. Will please the council refer the matter to Rob Adams, Professor Adams, to do something about... relocating the hot air balloons that are now landing on the grasslands in Royal Park, which is extremely dangerous because of the fire hazard.
Yes.
Thank you.
We will do that. Any further questions? Yes. Peter.
I refrained to speak on the submission before regarding C245. My name's Peter Papagiorgio. My cousin and I and our families...
Peter, again...
This is not
the time for submissions.
It's not a submission. I'm asking the question, why, as the two biggest landholders in one of the biggest developments that the Melbourne City Council has undertaken, in the Victoria Market Precinct, there are only six other properties left in the Vic Market Precinct, which we own two of them. And the Melbourne City Council owns now the Munro site. Why we were told this morning that there was a change made to this, or the amendments being made by the Melbourne City Council on DDO 14.
I'm not
we
sure.
Were not informed as the two... We own more property than anybody else in DDO 14 except the Melbourne City Council. We have a vested interest and an interest to make sure that this area succeeds. We've been there for 25 years.
Yeah, no, but we're now in a submission.
No, I'm just asking you why
no,
we
no, Peter,
aren't told.
You can't simply redirect by saying no. My question...
I'm shaking because I've never been to one of these
Peter,
meetings.
It's not a time for submission. Can I find out from you, for you, from our officers, what the consultation was or should have been and undertake to get back to you directly as a result of asking our officers the answer to that question?
Thank you.
Thank you. I wouldn't. Are there any other questions for us? In that case, can I thank members of the public, management and staff that are in attendance and declare the meeting closed at 7:53.